The government has announced the timeline today to get rid of the Resource Management Act and replace it with three new laws. The cornerstone of the new laws is the National and Built Environments Act, which is being referred to as the NBA. And there have been many calling for the RMA to be ditched over the years. To tell us what it is and why it needs to be changed, I'm joined by Dr. Bryce Wilkinson, a senior fellow at the New Zealand Initiative. Hi there, Bryce.
Yes, good afternoon.
Thanks for your time. Give us a beginner's guide. What is the RMA and how and why did it come about?
The RMA is the Resource Management Act, which was developed initially under the Labor government through 1987-1990, but actually enacted by the National government in 1991. And it was legislation aimed at pulling together all the acts relating to flood control, land slips, and environmental pollution of all kinds. So it was an omnibus act, which was designed to simplify matters, which it didn't achieve, while protecting certain minimal environmental standards for rivers and lakes and the built environment and much else. And there's general universal agreement that it hasn't achieved the latter objective of those minimal protections either.
Who was or is affected by the Resource Management Act? Whose behaviour does it regulate?
It's all-encompassing. In effect, whoever's listening and wherever we are, just look around the room or the landscape we see. We're living in an environment, and if the environment is broadly enough defined, which it is, it encompasses it's around us for every part of our lives. So it is truly said, only half in jest, that the Minister for the Environment is the Minister of everything. And so almost every decision we take can potentially be under the purview of bureaucrats or politicians telling us whether that or is not compatible with protecting the environment around us.
And for people listening who've done things like, done a renovation or changed some aspect of their property, they'll be familiar with resource consents. Is that sort of activity covered by the Act at all on a sort of day-to-day basis, you know, residential decisions?
Yes. Obtaining resource consents is really at the centre of the existing legislation. And it looks like, although we'll wait for the details, that that's going to continue in modified form in the future.
What's wrong with the RMA? What are its agreed shortcomings?
The agreed shortcomings are the ones I've enumerated, that it's failed to both facilitate development and to protect what its promoters thought of as fundamental environmental values. So there's been dissatisfaction with it from each side of the spectrum, the environmentalist side and the development side. And, of course, the problems are most visible in the urban area in the shortage of housing. There's much less agreement about what's wrong with the Act that led to those outcomes, which are so different from what the promoters at the time fondly hoped.
Can you give us an example of why the Resource Management Act might lead to a shortage of housing?
Yes. You need a property developer or someone wanting to develop, which might be someone developing their own land, has to get a resource consent. That's going to, and if it's a substantial development, you know, a few dozen houses or more, that's going to affect neighbouring properties. It's going to bring more people into the neighbourhood, more cars, more traffic. It's from a local authority point of view, it's going to increase the demand for infrastructure, roads, sewerages, water pipe rights and connected piped water. And the key feature of the 1991 Act is that it gave pretty well unfettered ability for people to oppose a development like that, even if they had no skin in the game themselves. You could be someone in the Coromandel opposing a land use development in Westport in the South Island. And so that was a key feature that it facilitated what's called NIMBYism, not in my backyard stuff, where people could oppose a development without being exposed to the cost to the wider community of having too few houses and not enough accommodation for people.
So all decisions of, I guess, economic development or development in general and environmental protection have a sort of a cost benefits analysis attached to them, don't they? You are always weighing different interests up. Now, some people might hear you saying that both the environmentalists and the developers were unhappy. That might be a sign that the balance was about right. But is it your view that it was balanced too far one way, or that it was actually good for nobody?
Good for nobody, really, because it exacerbated the problem. That the fundamental environmental problem is that people who want to benefit don't get confronted with the full cost of the community of providing that benefit. So in the case of opposing a housing development, they're not exposed to the cost of the community of not having enough houses to house people and people sleeping in cars or in overcrowded sort of leaky home situations. So the key failure from an economic point of view in the RMA as a piece of environmental legislation is that it did not confront people adequately with the costs of delivering to them what they wanted.
Well, the cost of not... Yeah, right. The cost of...
Of the foregone housing.
Right, yeah. The cost of opposing something.
Yeah, that's right. There's another... a related aspect is that ultimately most of these disputes are about whether land should be used, say, to grow crops or to grow trees, or to be preserved in a native state, or to be used for housing. So they're all alternative uses. And normally, the normal approach is that you let people sort that out for themselves once they're confronted with the cost. So if the most valued use is to build houses on it, that's what goes ahead. The Resource Management Act and the proposed replacements for it have a different view, and that view is that the outcome should be determined not by people confronting themselves with the trade-off, say, in the auction of a market for that land, but by, through political and bureaucratic processes. So the RMA seeks to dictate through resource consents what purpose land can be put to, and that's sort of the opposite of trying to internalise costs and benefits and let the outcomes be those which derive from the process of people confronting each other with their alternative preferences about land use.
So you mentioned the replacement here, and so we get to today's news, and people might have heard the Minister David Parker in the previous hour. So a couple of years ago, he kicked off this reform process. As you say, pretty much everyone agreed that something was wrong with the RMA, but how to fix it and what to replace it with. So commissioning retired Judge Tony Randerson was commissioned to review the law. Last year, he recommended repealing it and replacing it with three laws. As I said, the cornerstone being the National and Built Environments Act. How will it change the existing law, Bryce?
It's going to replace the existing single act by three major acts. One of them is the Natural and Built Environments Act, and its purpose is to enhance the quality of the built and the natural environment for the well-being of current and future generations. So that's very much open-ended. It's a whole bunch of value judgments in there. People can differ about what's going to be best for the well-being of current and future generations. And those differences are going to be dictated through political processes, which means that groups who are not politically powerful are likely to miss out. The second major piece of legislation is a Strategic Planning Act, and it's providing for sort of omnibus regional plans, spatial strategies, that again will sort of dictate through political and bureaucratic processes what land can be used for what purposes, and it's going to cover infrastructure, climate change, environmental regulation as well. So that's going to involve Local Government Act, Land Transport Management Act, Climate Change Response Act, and the National and Built Environments Act. It's got to manage interfaces between those. The third in the list of new acts is the Climate Change Adaptation Act, and it's going to increase the ability for local governments to dictate sort of retreat from sea level rise and that sort of thing with respect to sort of private properties, I suspect, as well as government-owned properties. Again, we have to wait for the details.
Will it, and I'm getting the sense that you're not particularly impressed with the replacements either, but given that some of these solutions have been designed by, you know, a retired Court of Appeal judge who's looked pretty closely at these things, what improvements do you expect that they will bring?
Well, we'll have to be hopeful that the Natural and Built Environment Act will do something to ease up the constraints on the ability to build more houses in New Zealand, because it's an absolute disgrace, I think, what's happened to the property market in New Zealand, and property prices being driven so high by a shortage of housing that it's becoming sort of intolerable problems for people who don't have houses and people who can't afford high rent. So that's a hope. But in terms of a senior judge doing it, you know, judges are used to legalistic processes rather than market processes where outcomes arise spontaneously from people trading with each other and facing other people's preferences. And so having a lawyer this sort of design a new legalistic system, it strikes me, it's a bit like that old anecdote about having a panel beater devise an intersection. We really need, I think, a lot less prescriptive legislation and a lot less attempts by central governments to dictate outcomes, not knowing the variety of people's preferences or the costs of achieving the outcomes, which they'd like to see dictated through political processes. So more decentralisation and less central government direction, I would think, is desirable. But we're heading in the opposite direction here.
Okay, and I should point out that, by the way, he was just the head of the panel. There was also a former chief operating officer at Auckland Council, a leading planner, and various other people with expertise in their own areas. Appreciate your view on the situation, though, and giving us a bit of an explainer of the story so far. Dr. Bryce Wilkinson, a senior fellow at the New Zealand Initiative, nice to speak with you today.